Hello and welcome to Fastener Talk. I'm the host, Will Lowry, and in this episode we once again look at the freight and raw material markets and the potential impacts for fastener companies. First up, we have an interview with Jeff Yates, Commercial Director at Espace Europe, who talks about the global situation in sea and road freight over the last 6 months, as well as focusing on Russian trade sanctions, the role of trade compliance, the situation within the Chinese market, as well as what role India will play in the global market going forward. The second part of the podcast is a discussion with Shankardeep Mukherjee and Chetan Soni from CRU Group, where we chat about developments within wire rod and steel long products, including prices, costs, end user demand, average scrap prices, crude steel production, and CRU Group's new cold heading wire index. But before we get to that, let's hear from Jeff about the freight market. Hi Jeff, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi Will, thanks for having me back.
No problems. I mean, how are things out there on the global shipping market?
Yeah, there's two sides to every coin. If you're a shipping line right now, it's not a great time, to be perfectly honest. There just isn't the cargo on the market at the moment. And spot rates continue to fall. We're seeing lines issue multiple blank sailings. So they're basically saying there's no space on ships, or we're not sending anything. And that's in an attempt to keep the market falsely buoyant. So to give you an idea, we've seen rates from reliable sources as low as $750 from China to the UK for a 40-foot container. And believe it or not, we've seen them as low as $620 from other sources. We believe that's at or just below a shipping line's cost. So if you cast your mind back a couple of years ago when we first started speaking, just after COVID, the rates were at $18,000 for the same routes at that point. So the market's totally changed. I remember speaking to you, as I say, a couple of years ago now, saying that I could never see the rates being back down to pre-COVID levels, and here we are. But we are in traditional slack season. Anything shipping from almost anywhere will arrive in America or Europe over Christmas time. So there's very little moving at the moment. And shipping lines have threatened to issue a GRI, a general rate increase, to bolster their income. But as I say, such is the competition on the market at the moment, I just can't see them sticking, and I can't see those being issued, to be perfectly honest. But as I mentioned, there is a flip side to every coin. So if you're a UK importer or exporter, our advice to you is to try and move away from fixed rates, if you've got any fixed rate contracts, to start to negotiate and to look at the spot market, because I think you will see some really big savings on the market if you can move your shipping line towards them. In the world of international shipping, the best rates are often bought at origin. So if you are responsible for any shipping fees from overseas manufacturers, I urge you to try and reach out to people like ourselves, freight forwarders, who have agents across the world and can guarantee via those agents the best rates on the market. Looking at air cargo as well, air cargo is generally holding up better than it is on the ocean. Volumes are steadily increasing throughout the year, and they're currently tracking 1% below what they were last year. So that's very good. But availability volume has increased. So the freight's there, but there's more capacity on the market. So obviously, again, if you're expediting any goods, now's a very, very good time to go and buy some really good rates on the air. But the picture across the world is pretty varied. Asia Pacific, Latin America and Africa are holding up very well. Their volumes are increasing. Whilst across in North America, ourselves in Europe and the Middle East are all down.
Okay, I believe there's some particularly important news for our listeners with regard to Russian trade sanctions.
I was discussing this just this lunchtime, actually, with a tier one supplier of one of the UK's big automotive manufacturers, and it does seem to be causing quite a few issues throughout the supply chain. So from the 30th of September this year, Europe and the UK have introduced a ban on importing steel and iron from Russia. So there's a couple of, I think it's tariff code 72 and 73. Anything coming in from anywhere in the world has got to be proven to be non-Russian. So most of those products probably won't be Russian, but we now have to prove that everything there that actually isn't Russian. And there's a couple of ways of doing that. Is to ask your supplier to provide a mill test certificate, which is causing a few issues from what we've seen. The other way of doing it is by declaration on the commercial invoice. We've issued a communique to our clients a few weeks ago on that, and we've posted it on the internet. So if I can, Will, I'll give you a link to that, and your listeners can have a look at there if they need any advice or any help on that.
Perfect. And that sounds great. I guess there's the need for trade compliance has never been higher, really.
Yeah, absolutely. We are seeing increased activity from HMRC. That they wrote to all customs brokers, ourselves included, a few weeks ago to ask that we remind our customers of the importance of auditing their own customs entries, whether they make them or not. And it's quite important to understand that when you do a customs entry on behalf of somebody, particularly in the UK, you'll probably be doing it as a direct representative. And that means that even though us as customs brokers are doing customs entries, we're doing it on behalf of and in the name of the importing clients. So it's that importing clients, the importer of record, who are actually responsible for any issues that can occur on those customs entries, even if they haven't made them themselves. So it makes sense in that sense to do an internal compliance exercise. What we're recommending is you don't do every file. You know, we'll be speaking to manufacturers who'll be doing many, many hundreds a month. You can't audit every file, but maybe you can start to have a look at every 20th file, and you should be looking for value, origin, the VAT paid, the duty paid, and the preference claimed. So it's a really good idea for you to get to understand and appreciate the online tariff. And that's one of the big pieces of advice I would say, is to have a look at the online tariff and get to understand that tariff in detail, because that's the driver of all of the duties and all of the taxes. And that's what HMRC will be looking for. Now, HMRC are keen to sort of push. They're not looking to punish any genuine errors. They just want them corrected. And also an error could mean you've overpaid VAT or duty, and they will be offering rebates on those. So it's nothing scary from HMRC necessarily. If there is a genuine mistake, find it, correct it. That's what they're looking for. They're not looking to punish importers necessarily.
On the subject of customs, the UK's Border Target Operating Model has been published. What are the highlights there for our listeners?
It's a massive document. It's 140 pages. We've been through it thoroughly. It's been quite a bit of bedtime reading our side. The main points of interest are the deferment for the second time of the Customs Declaration Service for exporters, the waiver code 999L no longer being accepted, and the implementation of an authorised operating scheme. So I'll lead you through each of those one by one if I can. The CDS should have been with us fully as of September, just gone, but it's been kicked back another 6 months to March 2024. We're told that date is fixed, and I encourage anybody who's not signed up to use the Customs Declaration Service yet to do so now. When we had a look at the Customs Declaration for imports, when the deadline was approaching, we had so many issues just for the amount of traffic going through the website. So plenty of time. If you haven't registered for Customs Declaration Service, do it now. And the CDS is a paperless system. So we've already seen pushback from service providers saying, look, we won't give you any receipts. We don't need to anymore. We won't give you any receipts for customs entries. Everything you need is available on the Customs Declaration Service website. So that's sort of really key. Get registered, have a look at it, and go to your customs provider and ask questions if you don't understand anything. The 999L waiver has been used as a get out of jail card for quite some time now, and HMRC have extended the deadline to use it for importers where certain goods don't require a license or additional documentation. And we welcome that decision generally because it just simplifies the process and it allows exporters to export and not have to worry about customs documents necessarily. But what's the lesson here is that the 999L waiver won't be carrying on forever. So again, it's important to understand the customs tariff and to actually go in there and have a look at your product codes, have a look at the additional codes that are required, because your customs provider will need to see those at some point, probably within the next 12 months, I would say. So it's just an exercise well worth doing and making sure that you've got time to do that in-house. The final point is an authorised operator scheme, which is coming into place for certain products of plant and animal origin. And the reason I mention this is not really core to your listener base, but we've seen some publication from Europe that suggests that there might be an authorised operating scheme backed by AEO for certain importers, again, of general products. And we're wondering if it might be used as sort of a test base for when the single trade window begins operationally. So I'm really interested to see this as a sort of customs specialist, a customs operator, to see if that will have any benefit, any leading on the way the customs operating systems are going to work in the future.
Yeah, that's all very interesting. Thanks, Jeff. I mean, There's a saying, obviously, if China sneezes, the world catches a cold. Have you got any updates on what's happening within the Chinese market at the moment?
Yeah, China, as we know, have been used for, as an engine, really, of global growth for many years. But in recent weeks in particular, its economic slowdown has alarmed international leaders and investors. They can no longer count on it being the cure against the weakness elsewhere. There's many issues, really. There's been a rapid spurt of activity after the lifting of COVID lockdowns, but that growth is now stalling. Consumer prices are falling. There's a real estate crisis across in China as well. And there's a deepening export slump. We've seen some data last week on unemployment of the youth, and it's going worse and worse and worse. And as I say, for an engine of growth, it's worrying times in China. In the wake of COVID and some questionable foreign policies leading to strained relations with Europe and the US, there's many companies looking away from China as their sort of sole manufacturing, and it's a so-called China plus one policy. So whilst nailing China of a few years ago would cause massive issues, and it will cause big issues, don't get me wrong, but it will lessen those issues because many suppliers are looking at a China plus one policy, so sort of moving all of their eggs in one basket across to many different markets.
Another big market is obviously India. I know that you've heavily invested last year in your UK-India freight service. Can you give us a bit more reasons about why you've done this?
Yeah, we've done a lot of research into emerging markets, looking for growth, really. And the standout economy over the next 20 years, I would say, is India. And it's predicted by 2030 to be the world's third biggest economy. And we've already seen many global manufacturers of Apple, Airbus, Rolls-Royce, many big manufacturers opening up plants in India. The UK and India have also been negotiating for a free trade agreement since Brexit, and we see that as a key driver in development in bilateral trade. And the volume of goods moving between our countries over the last year has increased many times, and we just see that increasing and increasing and increasing and for many years to come. What is key to understand is how vast India is and how different the states are. It's almost like a European Union on its own. You know, there's so many different states which are almost like individual countries. And we've got some fantastic relationships with agents which have taken time to sort of get together and understand how different regions work. So we've got great agents across all of India, as I mentioned, and that gives us local knowledge, local language and local understanding. And it allows us to treat India as separate markets almost, rather than just a one size fits all, because it just doesn't. I'm pleased to say I'll be traveling to Mumbai in December to further develop these key relationships, and it is an area that we feel will be growing, certainly for ourselves and across many industries in the UK.
Yes, India is a big player in the fastener industry. I assume you believe that kind of those types of imports and exports to and from India will only increase going forward.
I think India will be an ever increasingly important manufacturing nation, and that will affect the fastener industry and every other one too. And to answer your question, yes, we see volumes of exports and imports increasing. The UK has many specialist manufacturers, which we believe their products and services will be in high demand in India and other rapidly developing economies as well, such as Vietnam and Mexico too. But yes, India will be ever increasing and ever increasingly important for UK manufacturers, for import and export.
You mentioned earlier on the UK-India Free Trade Agreement. Do you have any more information on that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I can't say anything officially, but I know a man who knows a man who's in the know. and we're very much expecting some news at the end of October. And I do see it certainly coming. I do see a free trade agreement being announced this year for sure. It's very, very important. If you look at what's happening in the UK and India with general elections due next year, I see this being a big leader, really. And yes, these two great leaders, Sunak and Modi, are capable of driving these types of agreements through. And they will be very important for both sides. So, yeah, if I was a betting man, I'm not. But I would be putting some money at the end of October to expect an announcement this year.
Oh, no, very interesting. As always, Jeff, thank you very much. It's been some great insight into what's happening within the freight market.
Thank you, Will. It's been great to speak to you again.
As always, some great insight from Jeff there. I'd like to thank him for being part of the podcast and for sharing his knowledge of the freight market. Next up, we have Shankardeep Mukherjee and Chetan Soni from CRU Group, who are going to talk about the raw materials market. Hi, Shankardeep and Chetan. Thank you both for joining me. I'm looking forward to asking you about what's happening in the raw materials market.
Thank you, Will, for inviting us.
How has the situation regarding wire rod prices and steel long products developed since the last podcast in April, both in Europe and globally?
Yes, so that's definitely a trend we have observed where since we last spoke in April, the prices are generally down. They came down quite sharply in between around May-June period. But we are slowly seeing price increases come back in the very recent month. Demand per se is weak, which was one of the key reasons for the prices to come down. But input costs, including scrap prices, iron ore, coking coal prices, they are going up. And they have been the key driving factor for higher prices this month. In fact, the prices would have moved up even further in case the exchange rate movements were not adverse. Also, because of the weak demand, we have seen quite a few mill take maintenances and outages, and there is the supply response, which is preventing prices from coming down even further. Overall, the global long products price indicator, or what we call CRU-SP longs, it is up 0.7% month on month in October. Prices have risen in Asia. They were stable in America, and they have moved variably, though mostly up, in the European market. And I will let Chetan talk to you or explain about the European market in more detail.
Yeah, thank you. So in Europe, prices have continued to fall since April. Both in Germany and Italy, we saw wire rod prices fall by a magnitude of around 120 to 125 euros in the past 6 months, so quite a big drop. It's a similar story for rebars, merchant bar and heavy sections, where we've seen a fall in the last 6 months of around 140 to 150 euros for rebars, and a little bit more for merchant bars at 190 to 210. And also around 155 to 230 euros for heavy sections. Current prices that we're seeing in October are showing a little bit more variability. So in the past month, rebars actually increased in Germany, whilst wire prices in Spain, for example, also increased. And on the flip side, prices in Italy are on a downtrend due to a lack of sales. These increases that we saw in Germany, Spain, are largely cost-driven, as Shankardeep mentioned. The margins for mills are being squeezed, and also on the back of higher scrap and energy prices. In some cases, there were small restocking requirements, particularly in Germany, where we heard there were quite a few orders coming from the construction market in preparation for projects due to commence in Q1 of 2024. And so the current prices that we're seeing in the market, if we're looking at mesh quality wire rod, we're seeing a 565 to 610 euros. Rebars, 590 to around 615 euros. Merchant bars are slightly wider in terms of prices, so 700 to 750 euros, and heavy sections, 740 to 815.
And what has the end user demand been like?
So even though the mills we just now talked about, they have been able to pass on part of the increase in costs, it has not been 100%. And that actually tells us that the demand in the market remains quite weak. We did see some increase in demand that came through in September, but that was primarily restocking demand. And even then, the level of restocking that we have seen this year, it was quite modest compared to what is usually the level we saw in and around this time. And as a result, as Chetan was mentioning, that we saw the margins getting squeezed. So the rebar premium over scrap for both Asia and German came down 3% month on month. But Chetan can get into more details on the European market.
Yeah, so longs demand is reliant on the construction market. And in Europe, that's been struggling throughout the year due to headwinds, including high interest rates, difficulties with financing, high cost of business, and so subsequently, projects have been delayed or cancelled. The automotive sector has been a little bit more resilient this year, but it's important to note that we're still some way off 2019 figures in terms of production and demand. And the outlook is a little bit more uncertain going towards the end of this year now because pent-up demand is expected to be serviced, and there are question marks over new orders due to these aforementioned economic headwinds. We don't really see a pickup or a significant pickup in demand until we approach the second half of next year, and that's down to the fact that the economic sort of climate will become conducive to business at that point. Interest rates will fall, inflation will hit target figures in the second half of next year, basically.
We are just going to pause the podcast there for a second to give me time to mention our podcast sponsor for this episode, The Insert Company. The Insert Company UK is a specialist in thread inserts for wood, plastic and metal. All of its inserts and components are manufactured from the highest quality materials and conform to all industry standards. Imperial thread sizes are available, as well as inserts from zinc alloy, steel, brass, furniture connectors. Visit www.theinsertcompany.com for more information.
You've mentioned that the scrap prices has increased. What's the reasoning behind this?
So we have seen prices increase in the recent months. Compared to last time when we spoke, they are generally down because it has generally followed the trend of the finished steel market. But recently, prices have gone up due to higher demand of the alternative to scrap, which is met coal and iron ore. So metallurgical coal and iron ore prices have gone up, which is going to impact hot metal prices. And that is the, I would say, the competitor to scrap used in the production route for steel. So to keep in line with that, we have seen scrap prices go on. We are right now seeing again prices come down slightly because the demand has been subdued, and we have, as we initially spoke, given the weak finished steel demand, mills in Europe and Italy specifically, they're struggling with sales. So we are seeing supply response, which is they are curtailing production, and this is having a impact of reducing scrap demand, and hence eventually this month we are seeing scrap prices again starting to fall.
How is the global crude steel production progressing?
Yeah, just since April, again, it's been on a downtrend. So I think the last time we spoke, the global crude production was at around 162 million tons. Now, looking back in the past month or two, the figure's been closer to 152 million tons. And if we're looking at a sort of year-on-year analysis, in August, Europe was 4% down, the Americas were 4% down, whilst China was up 3% in terms of crude production. Now, in Europe specifically, there have been quite a few production cuts since the back end of last year, start of this year, and sluggish demand in the market. In addition to that, we've seen various major mills struggling with, you know, ArcelorMittal had the fire situations at Dunkirk and Asturias. IJmuiden in the Netherlands had a cold rolling line closed for several months, which affected the sheet market. So at various points throughout the year, there have been issues which have affected production, in addition to the fact that demand has generally been quite low. And therefore, we are seeing the sort of crude production, whether it's a year-on-year analysis or, even as we've moved further into 2023, the numbers have been on a downtrend.
And what is the current situation regarding costs, and how is that relationship between price and cost?
So when we look at costs per se and prices per se, we essentially price, we make it up as a component of cost plus margin. Now, what is margin? Margin is what is the mill it'll be able to charge over and above costs. So yes, there is a linkage with cost, but there is somewhere a additional factor to consider, which is demand. Now, in a situation where demand is strong, a mill will be able to charge a higher premium over the basket of cost of raw materials, and where demand is weak, a mill will not be able to charge that. So even though, and we spoke briefly about it in the beginning, we are seeing scrap prices going up, electricity prices going up, especially important for longs as gas prices have gone up. So cost is up. However, because the end use demand is weak, the mills are not being able to pass it through completely. It's not 100%. So the prices are not going up by as much as costs, basically. So over the medium term, so say in the 3 to 5 year period, prices usually come and settle at around the 90th percentile of the cost or 95th percentile of the cost of the curve, cost curve. But in the medium term or the near term, sorry, in the near term or the next few months or so, you will see, since demand is weak, even though the mills are going to pass through some amount of cost increases, not 100%. Now, depending on how much the costs rise, the cost of raw material rises, it will have an impact on the prices, but you will probably see margins remain at the current level or maybe go down slightly. It's not a straightforward relationship as far as the near term is concerned, when is the dependence between costs and price, basically.
Okay, and what has been happening within the stainless steel market?
In the stainless market, European prices have been moving upwards, and that's largely down to a lack of imports coming in from Turkey, Vietnam, Taiwan, China, and some major producers are also cutting production. Therefore, due to this unattractiveness of Asian imports, we do see a bit more headroom for prices to move upwards further. In the US, prices are maintaining a healthy premium to the European level, although there is a little bit of downward pressure now due to lower priced Asian and EU product. Typically, the prices are driven by the alloy surcharge, but demand generally on the whole is not great either. In China, they actually recorded a record month of production in September at 3.18 million tons for stainless, although some mills did enter negative margin territory. And so despite this record month of production, we are expecting some cuts in the coming months because the prices now are not supporting the costs, which is in contrast to what we've seen in the past 5 months in which crude production has been climbing, because it was profitable. That will now change. And probably more on a global scale, there is a lack of incremental demand. In China, despite production increasing in the past few months, there haven't been any spikes or increase in exports. And so the inventories are filling up. I think what we're seeing in most regions, therefore, is the price increases where they are occurring are cost-driven rather than demand-driven. And then looking forward, we think the economic recovery will dictate demand recovery expectations. So the first quarter of each year is typically quite weak due to various factors, one of them being the Chinese New Year and general weak activity. And then the second quarter typically marks a strong point in the year. And we might see some macro support in 2024 at that point as well, which might make some difference or might trigger increasing demand or the start of a recovery.
Kind of looking forward, what are the issues and risks that you believe will impact the raw material markets over the remainder of this year and into 2024?
When you're talking about raw materials, I'm assuming you're talking about the longs prices.
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah, we recently published our steel longs market outlook, and this is something which we have considered there as well. So I'll read out from there some of the key risk factors that we have considered there. The first is there is if there is any future stimulus measures that is implemented in China. Now, we have heard a lot of talk about it happening. And if any future stimulus measures means there'll be a lot of confidence boosting in the market, and which can cause a multiplier effect and support business confidence. And that would be a positive for demand in the near term, which we discussed right now is we are expecting to be weak. And this will have a bullish price impact. The second thing, again, to do with China is potentially there were talks about production cuts in China. And we believe that in the base case, we believe that any cuts in production will be relation to weak demand and not strict implementation of a government mandated policy. But in case the government strictly enforces this, then that means the production is going to be lower than our base case, which again is bullish for prices. Energy risk, energy supply chain risk, because with extreme weather events, geopolitical events, industrial strike actions, it's always a risk, more so now that Europe is not buying from Russia. So any geopolitical risk or any kind of supply chain impact on the energy complex, again, can have a bullish impact on prices. Turkey is a key long supplier to the seaborne market, but we had recently visited from our company into Turkey, and we understand that there is a growing pessimism amongst the industry participants there, and the cost of production is making exports at current prices quite unviable. So we might see, again, long trade might tighten, because Turkey kind of takes around 40% of seaborne rebar trade. Again, that is bullish for prices. Bearish for prices is we have already discussed that demand is weak. It has the potential to be even weaker in case interest rate hikes keep on continuing or stay higher for longer, which will have an impact on cost of projects as well as consumer durable loan or mortgage rates as well, which will discourage procurement or consumption of consumer goods, basically. So, yeah, these are the five key risk factors that we see as of now.
You mentioned Russia. Obviously, the EU and UK have introduced sanctions that prohibit the import of products manufactured in another country that include iron or steel originating from Russia. What impact do you think that will have on the market?
So what we are seeing is that over the past few months, we are seeing Russian billet prices have gone up. Russian domestic steel market has been noticeably stronger over the past year and a half or half year, as the local consumption has been quite solid. And domestic prices there have been rising and even jumped up in September, especially for the longs market. Also, very recently, we are seeing that Russian government have introduced export duties on a large list of products, which includes steel, and that has been applied from 1st of October. And this rates, the tariff rates are fixed at what the prevailing forex rate is going to be. Now, this have been the things which have been supporting the prices there. Given that, as we discussed, the Turkey dynamics, now Turkey it's going to be challenging for them to accept this increase in higher prices, because they can possibly go to Middle Eastern suppliers or buy Malaysian material, which however has a lead time associated with it, and also the supply is not limited. So there is a chance that export from Russia may actually halt or be even limited for a while, unless the Russian ruble continues to depreciate and supports export profitability. So that means that we might see some impact or upside to prices in the near term, because it's a very interesting thing. Turkey, what almost 40% of seaborne longs exporter, they also buy almost 30% of the seaborne scrap. And in the past, what I've seen is they have interchangeably either taken on billets from Russia, roll it, and then re-export it, or they have bought in scrap and made the steel domestically. So this is an interesting factor which is playing out. So in the near term, depending on how the Russian ruble plays out, we are potentially going to see some increase, slight increases in the prices as of now.
How can CRU Group work with customers? I mean, for instance, I know that you've just introduced a new cold heading wire index.
Yeah, right. We have recently launched a new European cold heading quality price for wire rod. And that was on the back of increasing demand to support the fasteners and fixing industry. We already assess prices for low and high carbon wire rod in Germany, Italy, Spain. And so we're hopeful with the addition of this new price series, we will provide our clients with a wider variety of wire rod price assessments. Now, how will this support the industry? I think we touched on some points earlier in terms of the construction market struggling this year. At the same time, we've seen the automotive sector show a little bit more resilience this year. So these are two of the key end-use sectors for the wire rod market and for the cold heading market. And we expect these key end-use sectors to grow significantly over the next few years. And as an example, light vehicle production, we see growing an annual compound rate of 7.9% between 2024 and 2028. In the same period, we expect construction spending to grow by 7.8%. And so we're hoping this new price point will, in effect, serve the needs of suppliers, buyers within these industries and beyond for this particular product. And the particular grade that we've been looking at is one of the more commonly traded materials, which is 20 MnB4. It's a little bit different to our existing prices in that our low carbon, high carbon prices are spot. The cold heading market is slightly different. And as a result, we will be considering both spot and contract transactions or quarterly sort of contracts that are typical in this market. A little bit of a sort of update on the actual market itself. It's naturally not too dissimilar to what we mentioned about the low carbon and high carbon wire rod markets. You know, it was equally as affected by the war in Ukraine, the high inflation, the high interest rates in which prices spiked from the middle of last year. Cold heading quality prices have equally normalized in the last year throughout 2023. And most recently, we've seen contract prices being settled in a range of 730 to 825 euros. Now, that's quite a big range, but that's also quite typical in the market. So southern-based producers tend to be on the lower side, and central northern-based producers in Europe are on the more expensive side. But on the whole, it still represents a correction of anywhere between 150 and 250 euros a ton since the peak, since the start of 2023. So a similar sort of magnitude, if not more so, to what we've seen in the low carbon and high carbon markets. But of course, we're hoping, and we see this market as quite a niche product, and we're hoping it will reflect the market conditions appropriately.
Once again, thank you, Shankardeep and Chetan. The information you provided is always interesting, and I'm sure our readers will get a lot from it.
Thank you for having us, Will.
Thank you, Will.
Some excellent insight there from Shankardeep Mukherjee and Chetan Soni from CRU Group. I'd like to thank them both for joining the podcast, and I'm sure you'd agree that both interviews have provided some excellent insight into what is happening within the freight and raw materials markets. That's it for this podcast. I hope it has proved valuable, and I'll speak to you next time.